Hour on the Fan Morning Show, 4759, and Hour 4 of the Fan Morning Show podcast, where we get the podcast. Feel Good Friday, guys. It's Feel Good Friday. We made it. Fighting weekend ahead. If you're a Toronto sports fan, the Blue Jays are back in action. Your two-day vacation from watching the Blue Jays is over. It's time to get right back into it. There's a fun theme tonight at the ballpark. Sitcom night at the Rogers Center. Not sure what it's going to entail. I am assuming multiple different sitcoms will be shared. There's a little laugh track. Anytime I say something funny, you got to play that, which is not much. They're giving away a Friends t-shirt. Friends, obviously, elite in the sitcom rankings. Text in 59590. Your favorite sitcoms. I'll sprinkle that out throughout the show. Mine is obviously The Office. I can probably tell you every single word and quote of The Office. It's kind of an embarrassing fact that I just play it all the time in my apartment. It's just always on. It's the best. I like Friends too, but The Office, number one. That's sitcom night tonight at the Rogers Center. Last night, though, special game. The Field of Dreams game. Really, really awesome to get a look at that. They do an incredible job. The jersey's elite. The atmosphere, incredible. It's really special. Holds special significance to a lot of the players, including Joey Votto, who you know well. He has a lot of personal connections with this movie and his childhood. He lost his father, and he spoke before and after the game about what this night meant to him personally, and we have that clip for you.
You know, we're right in the middle of the regular season, and we're in this daily routine of competing and performing, staying in the same city. So it's very much a shock to our schedule. I actually Google searched synonyms for special and exceptional came up, so I thought it was an appropriate word. I used to play catch with my father from 8, 9 years old, and it was a daily thing. He wanted me to be a pitcher like John Smoltz, and we threw every day. He'd catch me. We'd share that moment together, and you know, he passed away about 14 years ago. And here I am at the Field of Dreams, you know, longing for a catch with my father, but still basking in this with a smile, knowing that, you know, if he was here, he would have loved it and we would have shared it together. So it's very much a full circle moment for me.
Really beautiful story. Joey Votto talking about his father, longing for a catch with him. It's bigger than baseball. That last night was a really special evening. And he also speaks on what the Field of Dreams game and the energy around it and what it means to go to this type of one-off special event. And I thought that was a really great clip as well.
Performing, staying in the same city. So it's very much a shock to our schedule. We're not used to, you know, flying in the day of a game, performing, and then flying out. But, you know, for this particular game, for this day, for this moment, it is absolutely worth it, and it's, I think, one of the most special days of my major league career.
Really special night. The broadcast, or the MLB, did something very unique as well with last night's game. I think it's a polarizing conversation. I'd love for you to text in 59590 your opinions on this. So Harry Caray, the legendary Chicago Cubs broadcaster who passed away in 1998, was shown as a hologram during the seventh inning stretch. Personally, I'm not a big fan of holograms. They're a bit creepy. I understand that it's a historical significance and it's a nice way to tie in the history and the past and the present. But if you've seen the Harry Caray hologram, this is quite a debate on Twitter, as if holograms are cool or not. If they're creepy to you, please let me know, because I'm on the fence. I tend to think that it's an uncomfortable thing. So did Twitter. Maybe you're a big hologram fan. maybe you work in hologram production. I don't even know how it works. But they made their debut of it, and I'm not quite sure. I don't think I need to see that again. Please weigh in. We're going to talk more baseball later in the show. Field of Dreams last night. Blue Jays back in action tonight. But what is still continuing to be a massive narrative here in the city and in Montreal, Canada-wide, is the National Bank Open, which has been a success for some Canadians. Unfortunately, Bianca's out as of last night, but Felix still pushing through. Let's talk to Ben Lewis, Sportsnet.ca, tennis writer and host of Matchpoint Canada. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ailish. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm consuming a lot of tennis, and that is an exciting change of pace throughout the summer where we just consume a lot of baseball. And it's a nice thing to be able to turn on my TV, especially in the Canadian market, and to see some of the greats. So let's just start with last night. Bianca pushes her way almost to the end there and falls in the third round. What did you make of her performance, her return after being out a little bit this season, and just what she was able to do over the last three matches?
Yeah, honestly, I think there are plenty of positives to take from the week. Tough tournament, but getting two wins, specifically, like, she started against a player named Daria Kasatkina, who's inside the top 15, plays tough tennis. And I think we remember watching that first match of the tournament. It was such a physical and emotional grind. We were probably worried she might be going down right away, which would have been a disappointment, but she fought through that. She beat Alize Cornet, who's a very crafty veteran player from France. And last night, the atmosphere was great. It's been fantastic every evening. But Zhang Xinwen, just 19 years old, really impressive player. She was almost inside the top 50 at the start of this tournament. And she just played a really fantastic match. I didn't think Bianca did all that much wrong. I thought maybe the pressure kind of mounted a little bit in the third set where she needed kind of a big hold of serve. It was 2-3, and Zhang sort of won that key game and gained some confidence and steam and sort of took over at the very end.
Do you think that Bianca is in her return right now? Like, what percent of Bianca do you think we're seeing? How much more does she have to prove or to grow with the rest of this tennis season? I know that the return was quick. Do you think there's still a little bit of progression for her?
Yeah, I think she's getting there. It's funny, you talk to certain tennis analysts who've been watching her, and they're sensing, like, I see a breakthrough around the corner for Bianca, and I sort of feel that way too. I think we've seen sort of 80 to 85% of that level. We see flashes and stretches where she's playing amazing tennis. Like, towards the end of that first match against Kasatkina, I thought she really took over, even though she wasn't feeling well. We saw it against Cornet in the second round, and we saw it for stretches last night. She had to dig really, really deep to win that second set. Sometimes her matches are an emotional roller coaster, but I think it's always been that way with Bianca. Even if you go back to 2019, where she won that historic U.S. Open title, she was coming through some difficult, tough three-set matches, finding her way. But I see the game is nearly there. She still has that huge, powerful forehand that can penetrate through the court. Her serve, I thought, could have been a little bit stronger last night, but keep in mind she took 6 months off from the sport, even just a mental break from the sport where she wasn't even touching a tennis racket. It's not like it was 6 months away, but I'm still practicing and training. She literally put the tennis rackets down for many months. So the fact that she's at this level, I think is honestly a really good sign.
And she was quite positive about it as well post-game. And I know she's one to be specifically hard on herself, but I thought her post-game comments were actually a really good feeling if you're a fan, that she feels like she's in a good spot. She doesn't take a lot of negativity from the tournament. And so that is a promising feeling for Canadian tennis fans as well. But I want to get into Zhang as well, the new face. I was really impressed with her last night. You said 19 years old. She's really just burst on the scene over the last, I guess, couple tournaments. Someone I had never really followed before. Obviously, she's new. What did you like about that performance last night? And maybe what do you think her ceiling could be at such a young age? I know it's hard to predict, but...
Yeah, well, look, she played her first, this was her first calendar year on the WTA where she played all four Grand Slams. And normally when you have a young player sort of learning the circuit and becoming that touring professional, they're playing Grand Slam tournaments, we don't normally see any type of run at those slams unless they're pretty special. And she made the fourth round of the French Open, being in the final 16 of the French Open, the first time she plays it, and she made the third round of Wimbledon. So mm-hmm. already she's winning big-time matches on the Grand Slam stage, which is incredible. I think her backhand wing in particular held up really, really well. Bianca could not hit through that side, and we saw, especially in that third set, her backhand down the line was taking over. And she served incredibly well the entire match. I thought her serve was fantastic. She was a bit of a Canadian killer, honestly, this week, because first round she had Rebecca Marino. That was a really tough three-set match. Zhang defeated her, and now she's taken out Bianca. But there's a lot to like in her game. I see a ceiling of, you know, it's always tough to make these predictions. Mm-hmm. I see like top 10, top 15 potential, but you never know.
Oh, that's really impressive, especially at that age. I know that, as you said, hard to predict, but she seems to have the stuff. She seemed to be quite the, you know, humble girl afterwards. And she's like, I just really appreciated being here, and it's exciting to be competing. So excited to watch her through the progression of her career. So quarterfinals today on the women's side, It's some interesting matchups. A couple of players, like, as you said, Zhang, who's not even really ranked at this tournament yet. Not a lot of top seeds left. What do you predict happening today in Toronto?
Well, we have one, like, amazing match, I think, to start everything off, mm-hmm. which is Simona Halep, who's a two-time slam champion, and she's actually a two-time champion in Canada as well, and she's playing Coco Gauff. And I have to say, for anybody who hasn't been down to the tournament yet,
you gotta go.
You gotta go, and you gotta watch Coco. Like, she's an incredible athlete. You don't really, just watching her on TV almost doesn't do it justice. Her movement, her speed, her flexibility, it's a marvel to watch. She's played like two electric matches actually on the grandstand, which I think is the best side court to check out if you have the opportunity. And she took out the Wimbledon champion, Elena Rybakina, the starter tournament. And then she took out Aryna Sabalenka, who's another phenomenal, steady top five player. And now she gets Halep, who has a lot of fans in Canada. There are a lot of Romanians in Toronto who come out and support her. She's played great, as I mentioned, in the past. And I think it's going to be a very intriguing matchup, because Halep, she's 30 years old. She's on, you know, the second sort of installment of her career, and she recently added Patrick Mouratoglou, Serena's former coach, to her camp. And you have Coco Gauff, who's still very early on in her career, but is already a French Open finalist, and I think she's going to do incredible things in the sport. So that's sort of the matchup that I'm certainly looking at, but it's one of many. Belinda Bencic will be highlighting the night session. She's been playing great tennis. We know how well she played taking out Serena and then took out Garbiñe Muguruza last night. She's someone who could go far as well.
Yeah, no Canadians left on the women's side, but certainly going to be tuning in. And I have the chance to see Bianca's first match this last week. And you're right, the atmosphere is incredible. It's been really fun to watch the fans come out in full force. Hopefully they still do, even though Bianca isn't playing. One other Canadian, Layla, fell a little bit short in I think it was Monday's or Wednesday's game in terms of moving forward. What do you think of her performance, just in terms of also being someone that came back from injury, getting, I think it was her first like games in quite a while as well. I don't know why the two Canadians have the same narrative here, but a little bit of a rust factor.
Yeah, I mean, she was definitely looking for match play. Like, the last time she was on the court was French Open quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. And I honestly thought then she was playing really, really well. She had progressed through the first half of that tournament. She actually had a big win over Belinda Bencic, who's a great player, and then suffered that foot injury in the mm-hmm. quarterfinal loss. And again, she had sort of over a month where, because of the foot injury, she couldn't train and practice. So just getting back here to Canada with the pressure, where I know she'd been training for the past few weeks, but just that match play is always a little bit different getting back into a tournament. I thought her tournament started well, getting that win, getting over that hurdle, a tough three-setter against Storm Sanders, and then just a tough one the other night against this Brazilian Beatriz Haddad Maia, who's having a breakout season. She's won two titles this year, and then she shocked the world number one Iga Świątek yesterday. So it's not like, for me, it wasn't really a bad loss for Layla. It was obviously, she's just getting back after injury. Then she plays someone who's in great form and kind of hot and just took out Iga. So obviously Haddad Maia is super confident. Layla just getting back. I still think she can, you know, get to her best form before the U.S. Open. She'll go to Cincinnati right now and get that tournament practice and more match play. And we know how special the U.S. Open was for her last year. So let's hope she can find that fire again.
Okay, so we got to ask, obviously, a little bit about Serena Williams. A big week narrative-wise for a lot of Canadians, but kind of stole the spotlight, of course, with announcing that she'll be retiring, or as she said, transitioning or evolving into the next steps of her career. You had a chance, I believe, to see her last match here in Toronto.
Yeah, I was there. It was an incredible atmosphere. Like I think for Toronto, it was, I think, a privilege for tennis and sporting fans to know we are seeing Serena for the last time, right?
I mean, I was a little jealous. I didn't get a chance to go to that, but it seemed that the Toronto fans put a lot of support and they came out and really wanted to show their love for Serena. So when we try to wrap up, I mean, I know she's not done yet, but you try to start to think about the legacy she leaves behind in tennis. How difficult is it to encompass what somebody means to the sport of tennis, to sport in general, to women of color, and everything that she's done over her illustrious career?
Yeah, I mean, I think Serena's probably one of those rare few athletes that's, of course, not only generational, but she's a global sporting icon. She transcends tennis. And I think, interestingly enough, even before she had announced, before the Vogue magazine piece came out revealing that she is retiring and would be stopping after the U.S. Open, we had a couple of players come through the press conference. They were asked about Serena before this news came out, and Maria Sakkari called her the greatest female athlete of all time. Coco Gauff was saying how special and unbelievable it is that Serena and Venus here, and Venus were here, and yeah, Venus also played as well on the Monday night. So already people were talking about, wow, it's amazing just to have Serena back. Mm-hmm. She's an absolute icon. She's a legend. She's a role model. And then there was the retirement news that came out. So, of course, we're asking these players more and more about her. But just obviously the respect she's garnered throughout the tour. And I spoke to Belinda Bencic actually the other day. And we know Bencic defeated her. And Bencic said one of the most impressive things about her, like beyond the achievements and statistics, is she's played through generations. And Bencic said when she was coming up, she never thought it was ever possible for her to play Serena. Firstly, because she said, well, I don't know if I can make it to the tour. I'm going to try. And secondly, she said, like, surely Serena won't be around by the time I get there. And, you know, she's ended up playing Serena Williams now, I believe, four times. So she played her in 2014, 2015, a couple more times, and finishing in 2022. So I think she was most amazed by the fact that, like, wow, like, I got here somehow. This player that I was watching like 12 plus years ago is still here and still dominating. And, you know, the length of her career, the stretch of domination has been incredible. She won that first U.S. Open back in 1999. And for me, one of her greatest achievements, I think she won the Australian Open while she was 2 months pregnant. Like, yeah. how do you do that? It's unbelievable. You know, for me, she's the greatest women's tennis player of all time. It's going to be such an amazing send-off, I think, of the U.S. Open. I've already heard, like, ticket sales have gone through the roof.
15,000 more tickets were sold after her announcement.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. yeah, she deserves all the fanfare in the world. She's been an incredible role model, I think, off the court, too, for what she stands for. So, yeah, just what a privilege that we got to see her one last time here in Toronto.
So I know her relationship with Venus is obviously quite strong as sisters, but their careers are intertwined. How do you think the effect of this feels on Venus, and does that change her timeline at all in her future?
Yeah, it's tough to say. Serena is more vocal as a person than Venus, so it's often a little difficult to get a read on what Venus is still aspiring for in her career. I still think she's capable of some good tennis, and it's amazing to think she's 2 years older than Serena Williams. Mm-hmm. And the fact we got her here again was a bit surprising. I know the tournament director Carl Hale, Serena wanted to play. And, of course, she took the wild card. And Carl, I believe, just reached out to Venus after that and said, Venus, why don't you come and join us? Like, I'll give you a wild card, play the tournament. So that worked out. Like, if I could have the perfect send-off, it would be Venus also retiring at the same time as Serena.
I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking as well. I don't want to put that in the universe, but I think it's a good narrative.
Well, it's a great narrative, and imagine like if they teamed up and played doubles one last time at the U.S. Open. They have, you know, they have a storied, incredible doubles career as well. The two, as a pair, won 14 Slam doubles titles, 14-0 in finals too, which gives you a sense of like how incredibly dominant they are. But yes, Serena is probably the greatest of all time. Venus is, you know, coasting into the Hall of Fame when her career is done. She's also a 7-time singles winner, 5-time champion at Wimbledon, where she's dominated in the past, and only a few years ago made a final there actually as well. So I hope Venus gets an amazing send-off as well. It's just she doesn't really speak about it, so we don't know when that's coming.
Well, if they do get that doubles finale, we'll get you back on the show to discuss. Quickly before I let you go, we got to talk about the Canadian still in action. Felix, continuing to have that hometown hero headliner tournament. How much of this is going to propel him throughout the rest of this tournament, and what should we be expecting?
Yeah, I think he's playing amazing tennis, and we've seen a lot of upsets on the men's side over in Montreal, but Felix has been a very steady force, and yesterday he played just a really, really clean, solid match. He defeated Cam Norrie, who's a tough, like, top 12 player, had 15 aces. I watched some of that match just from the media center. I thought he was playing so, so well. He gets such a lift, I think, playing in front of his home crowd in Montreal. And there's been a couple blips, I suppose, through the season for Felix, but the highs have been really, really impressive. He notched his first ATP title earlier in the season in Rotterdam. He made the quarterfinals of the Australian Open, where he had a match point against Daniil Medvedev, who was the number one seed at the time. And he pushed Rafael Nadal to 5 sets at the French Open, which is maybe a weird flex to say I came close to beating a guy, but when you're talking about Rafael Nadal on clay, if you're ever close to beating him on clay, it is honestly worth noting. And I think he's been really, really consistent so far this week. He gets an interesting quarterfinal matchup this afternoon against Casper Ruud, who was French Open finalist earlier this season. But I love Felix's game, especially in the summer swing. He loves these hard courts. And this is kind of him ramping up towards the U.S. Open, where he's made the semifinals before. So can you imagine the storyline if he could win this tournament? I think it's possible, honestly. Rafael Nadal's not there. Djokovic is not there. Alcaraz and Sinner, two great talents, went down early. Like, if I'm looking at this field, Felix is one of the best players I see.
So in today's matchup, you mentioned Casper Ruud, quarterfinal. It seems that Felix is still favored in the betting odds, at least. Do you believe that is the accurate prediction? He's got the edge, and if so, why is that?
Yeah, I would say it's very close to a coin flip. I think this is kind of a surface matchup, right? If it were Ruud against Ože Aliassim on clay, I think you'd be pushing Casper by quite a sizable margin, just because he's won 8 of his 9 titles on the clay court surface. But Felix has had, you know, the predominant, most of his success coming on hard courts, and especially in the summertime is when he just plays his best tennis. I think there's probably a little bit of a boost for the fact that you go into an atmosphere for Ruud, knowing literally everybody in this stadium is rooting against
Nobody's cheering for him.
Exactly. No one is cheering for him. Except for his coach, I suppose, who will be on the sidelines. So, yeah, I think Felix having that backing, he should be the slight favorite. I agree with it.
I hope you're right. I'm looking forward to seeing him today and continuing with both sides of the National Bank Open. Ben, appreciate you joining today. Looking forward to catching up, maybe a little U.S. Open double retirement. We'll talk.
I love that. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Ben. Ben Lewis, Sportsnet.ca tennis writer and host of Match Point Canada. He's currently at the National Bank Open in Toronto, where you can catch all that action as well. Still continuing today on Sportsnet. Our commentators and our hosts have been great at the National Bank Open. Just a shout out to them. Long days grinding. They've been entertaining, insightful, and really fun to listen to. So keep it up, everybody. Looking forward to seeing how Felix can. I'm really feeling positive about him. It's that home court feeling. I know Bianca felt it. She talked a lot about it in her post game last night. I know she got defeated. I know she's out of the tournament, but she had some really positive words, and this is what she said.
That was so awesome. I really wish I won for you guys, honestly. Without you, I don't think I would have gotten past the first round, just the way I was feeling. But I can't wait to come back, honestly. That's all I'm thinking about right now. So yeah, don't let the haters bring you down. Believe in yourself. Surround yourself with very supportive people. And then also, if you're really committed to something, you know, just work hard, put your effort in there. But also don't forget to take time for yourself. I think that's super important. Do the things that you love and just give love as well.
I mean, perfect words to send you on to a wonderful Friday, a wonderful weekend ahead and into our break, because another Canadian team in action yesterday, Team Canada at the World Juniors. 11-1 victory, not a big deal. It's a weird tournament. We know that. Sam Cosentino is going to join us after the break, Sportsnet's NHL draft analyst, to talk about who's standing out on the Canadian side, who might be a little sleeper that we need to keep our eyes on, and kind of what to expect for the rest of this tournament in Edmonton. That's next on the Ailish Hour on the Fan Morning Show.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 Fans, Ailish Hour, Hour 4 of the Fan Morning Show podcast, where we get your podcasts and listen to the previous 3 hours. We did a really fun thing, actually, on the show today. In the 7:30 block with Tim McAuliffe, we did our NFL power rankings draft. So who you want to watch the most? NFL's back. Last night we had some preseason games. Tonight, more preseason games. All weekend, preseason games. So take a look at the podcast to see who we drafted. Disclaimer, I obviously got the Bills first overall. So you got to listen to the podcast to find out who else I drafted. So NFL back in action, but the World Juniors also continuing a little bit more of a quiet tournament for obvious reasons. Let's talk to our guy, Sam Cosentino, Sportsnet NHL draft analyst. Sam, good morning.
Good morning. It's all Ailish all the time. Eh?
It is. It's me. I run this show, run the station, no sleep, grind it out. It's been fun. It's been a good couple of weeks.
Amazing.
Thank you. So I know you were at the tournament. I don't think you are anymore, but I wonder about the weird energy. And I know that obviously there's been some awful attendance. That's to say the least. Is this a lower level of competition? Is it because it's the summer, or is this all because of the current situation that Hockey Canada finds himself in?
Well, I think it's a combination. So I just want to clarify for you, Ailish. I was out in Red Deer for the under-18s. That's the Hlinka.
Nice.
And it's kind of interesting to juxtapose what you're seeing in terms of attendance for what's happening at the World Junior. So, you know, and while I haven't been to Edmonton, I've obviously been keeping a close eye on things, but you know, my area of expertise falls more in the draft. And so the Hlinka tournament is really the start of the scouting season for the 2023 draft class. And with that comes along a few players that not necessarily represented their country at the under-18s, but are playing in the under-20s. For example, Dalibor Dvorsky is a high prospect, playing with the Slovaks. He's a guy that I'd be keeping an eye on. But of course, because of there's tons of prospects throughout the course of the tournament. I keep a close eye on things. So when you're sitting there watching on TV, it kind of looks like they're back in the bubble.
Yeah.
Especially when Canada's not playing. Yeah. It's really, really a bizarre thing. So, you know, listen, most people have things planned for the summer. They have their kids, their home, they're vacationing, they're traveling, they're involved in activities, you know, sports. I can speak to that, coaching Little League baseball. You're jam-packed. So that takes away a lot of people right away. Current climate with Hockey Canada, people are saying to themselves, why am I spending the money on this organization when it's been proven that the money I spend to put my kid in hockey is going towards, in part, paying for some of the misgivings and the misdoings of people in Hockey Canada past. Do I want to support that endeavor? Surely people are answering with their wallets and saying no. Then you look at the fact that, well, it just doesn't have that winter feel where people are at home. They don't really have other places to go. You know, you're home for the Christmas holidays. It doesn't have that same kind of feel. Then you don't have the Russians that are involved in the tournament. That brings down the overall level of competition in the event. So you have a number of factors here that have come together to give us what we're seeing, and that's a much lower attendance event.
It's a bit of a concoction of bad things there, especially if you're looking to maybe evaluate some of these players. It could be more difficult just in terms of what you said with the level of play. And I wonder if you're a scout or you're somebody just trying to get excited about some of these players. You know, Canada wins 11-1. Obviously, Mason McTavish looks like a stud. But how tough is it to really get a full picture, especially when the Russians aren't at the tournament, who are obviously usually a very competitive team?
It is tougher on one hand because you don't have the same level of competition. So when you're a prospect, either for the draft upcoming or for an NHL team, you want to have your prospects playing against the very best competition that's available. Now, having said that, because we're going to have these two events close together, the August, which is essentially the 2022 World Juniors, and then the January, the December-January, which is in Halifax, which is the 2023, each individual country has an option of what to do with their players. So, for example, we're going to see a drastically looking different team for Canada when we get to December. But what that means in the grand scheme of things, if you're an NHL team, you probably have some players on this August team that might not have gotten the opportunity otherwise, or quite clearly when there's nine different players from what we saw, you know, in January and December, they're getting opportunity that otherwise wouldn't have been presented. So as an NHL team, you're really excited about that because you're still playing in a high level of competition, maybe not the best, but that player might not have been playing otherwise. Now, obviously, Mason McTavish is a different story altogether. He looks like an NHL player. Oh, he is an NHL player. Like, he's unbelievable. And his path over the last 2 years has been really amazing and a really cool path to track. So, you know, on one hand, again, you're talking about the level of competition being a little bit lower. On the other hand, players that are being given opportunities that they might not otherwise have had. And I think that's a pretty cool thing if you're an NHL team to get them in this level of competition.
So Mason McTavish, as you mentioned, the big storyline last night, at least 6 points yesterday, playing a lower ranked team, especially. But you said he's looking really ready just to be at an NHL level, almost too good for this tournament. How are the Ducks approaching his, you know, his growth? And is he just going to slot seamlessly into that younger lineup?
I think so. I mean, you have Pat Verbeek is a guy who comes from the Steve Yzerman school. And so you're seeing what Steve Yzerman is doing here is a couple of years, just working with their prospects, getting some of their young guys, building up through the draft. And then all of a sudden, boom, we're going to sign this guy, that guy, this guy, that guy. We like our core. Now we're on the path where we still have prospects. We still have a really competitive team that, you know, should be on the edge of making the playoffs this year. And I think Pat Verbeek's going to take that same path with this Ducks team. That we're going to stockpile our guys, we're going to trade away a few pieces, we're going to add some more, and then probably not this year, but probably a year from now, they'll be pretty active in free agency and going out and filling out the rest of the roster to make them competitive once again. So Mason McTavish is a huge part of that. Jamie Drysdale is obviously a huge part of that moving forward. And I think when it comes to McTavish, I mean, you want him playing in all those high-level situations. You want him playing on winning teams. You want him to experience losing as he did with the Hamilton Bulldogs at the Memorial Cup. But you also want him to become a leader and do all the things that you project him to do in the National Hockey League. Now, are all of those things, the minutes, the power play time, going to be granted to him with Anaheim right away? Probably not, but he's definitely on that path to be a key piece to their club moving forward.
Not to be shunned aside in terms of who's the top comment or top person to look at, but Connor Bedard. I mean, obviously his growth has been outstanding. He's going to be the potential number one. You don't want to lock it in because things can change. He's still a long ways away, but what have you seen in his growth from last year when, I think I've mentioned it before, he was one of the 13th forwards and he wasn't, you know, the star that we're seeing now. He has grown outstanding amounts to be a top line producer, top power play in such little time. What is it for you that has been the biggest step that he's taken?
Well, it's funny. I was just playing in a golf tournament the last 2 days and one of his former coaches.
Must be nice.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not you all Eilish all the time, right? So Dan Nocio is one of his coaches out there. He's been skating with him all summer. And I said, you know, I'm just watching some video of this guy. He just looks to be quicker off the mark, where he has that explosiveness of a Nathan MacKinnon. And then as soon as he touches the puck, he can escape everybody right away with those first three steps. So I don't think he's ever going to skate with the same power that MacKinnon does, but it really looks like the acceleration of the first three steps have jumped to a different level. Now, you're talking about a guy 51 goals last year with Regina, albeit in an Eastern only conference type of schedule, but still 51 goals is nothing to sneeze at. So I see growth in terms of just size, strength. You can see it in his face from, you know, going back to when Regina made him the first overall pick. I mean, he looked like a baby then. He's starting to grow into looking like a teenager. So and obviously you can see it on the ice. The one thing that hasn't changed with Connor, his ability to shoot the puck and his release are truly, truly world-class. And that just continues to improve. So he's a star in the making, but it's funny, Eilish, because if, you know, I like how you're cautious there about being the number one pick. We talked about Shane Wright forever, 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 forever.
And look what happened.
Number four. That's right. So good cautious observation on your part.
I don't want to get ratioed. Someone hears this one day, clips it, and says, well, look back on August 12th. You said this. Just being cautious. Is Bedard going to be one of those guys or this draft upcoming where teams are like tank for Bedard as much as the McDavid excitement was around? Do you think he can be that level of superstar?
Oh, yeah, I think you're seeing it already. I mean, no disrespect to Arizona, but I think this is a path that they've wanted to take to kind of focus on this moment, you know. And I think there are probably a couple of other teams in that regard as well. But where we might have seen four or five teams in this race previously because of the pandemic and because teams have placed that importance on playoff revenue, maybe we're not seeing quite the number of players in the race, you know, don't try hard for Bedard type of thing. So I think it's an interesting scenario, but I do think there are teams that are definitely thinking that way. Now, having said that, this 2023 draft class is outstanding and there's a ton of depth at the high end of it. And so, you know, obviously it's probably going to look a little bit more like McDavid Eichel. Like if you don't get McDavid, Jack Eichel's still a pretty darn good player. And I think that list extends well beyond the top 10 in this draft class. And that's what's pretty cool, because if you have teams that are in that situation that are, you know, near the bottom of the table, they're still going to have an opportunity to get a really, really good player beyond Bedard.
So someone that's already been drafted and put into the Leafs organization, we got to ask about Matthew Nye. So
we
actually had him on yesterday on our show. He sounds like a pro. You know, he's quite intelligent. He's got all the hockey player ways to avoid difficult questions. Like I asked him about the Arizona arena and he didn't go on record to say that he didn't like it. But anyway, he sounded like a great pick for the Leafs. So what are you needing for this season ahead for him at university before he's, you know, potentially going to slot into the Leafs in a postseason run?
Well, just that continued development, the maturity in the game, the maturity in strength from a physical perspective, and kind of the experience of going through the grind of what looks to be more like a regular season, the opportunity to go and play for a championship in college. But I like the fact that he's mature enough to say, you know what, I'm not quite ready. I don't want to be a guy who signs and then, yeah, he burns the first level, the first year of his entry-level deal, but ends up spending the next year in the American Hockey League. Mm-hmm. I think his plan is to go to use this additional year to hone the rest of his craft and then come into camp next year and say, hey, I want to be a Toronto Maple Leaf and I don't want to be a guy who goes backwards or has to go to the American League. Now, I think that's what his plan is. I think the Toronto Maple Leafs would like to see that happen because he's a little bit of a unicorn in terms of their prospect base. A guy with size who can play with some power, who's got really good hands around the net. Most of what we see in Toronto are more smallish, skilled forwards. Hervonen would be another one of the guys in the pipeline that you'd see that, you know, doesn't compare in terms of the size to Matthew Nyes. So he's a really important piece, I believe, for Toronto and their prospect base moving forward just because of that size, and it's an element they don't have a ton of.
I agree with the point that it shows some maturity for him to want to go back to college, to take that time to develop. He also mentioned, like, I want to enjoy college. Like, I totally agree with you, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm sure that would be nice to have a college experience. Do you think we're going to see more guys start to go that route, stay in NCAA schools, fight for, you know, a championship, be a leader, play with players that you're going to be asked to do more in before they just come over and do an AHL season or two?
I think that's a question that's probably better answered 3 years from now. So
I'll call you back up, okay?
Nice. So August 12th will be all Ailish all the time 3 summers from now, so that'd be great. So I think about Owen Power a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Owen Power could have made the jump to the National Hockey League, but he wanted to go back and experience the college life only because he was there during a pandemic. And the same thing can be said about Matthew Nyes. Mm-hmm. You go to college, it's a pandemic, things just aren't the same. They're not. Any way you look at it. And so I think the opportunity for these guys to have that experience who have come through the pandemic is really super important. I believe that because it's nice to see kids be kids sometimes as opposed to being thrust into this adult life at 18 and 19 years old. But I also think that we'll probably return to the typical path that we saw before the pandemic. So you get a player, he jumps into college a bit early. He gets drafted out of the U.S. under 18 program, or in some cases out of the college program if he's a late birthday type of guy. And then they'll experience 1 or 2 years there. They're sign their entry level deals, get into the American Hockey League, trying to burn a year of that entry level deal and continue forward. But I think we're in a special time right now. And that's why I say 3 years from now, I think that story is going to be a little bit different. I don't think this is going to be a trend starting type of thing. Mm-hmm. I think we're in a specific time period where guys who are in college in the last couple of years haven't had the chance to have that true experience. And I think they want to have that. And I can't blame them for that. But I think it goes back to a more normal, you know, scenario once you get another 2 years down the road here.
As somebody that had the normal college experience at an NCAA hockey school, I can certainly agree that you should totally go and you should embrace it and you live it up and then you come be a pro and chase the Stanley Cup. Okay, last one before I let you go. A couple other Leafs in action at the World Juniors on the Finnish side. Anything standing out so far early in the tournament from Niemelä and Hervonen?
Well, Hervonen, it's nice to see. You know, he's a captain. He's playing a ton of minutes. He's you know, contributed, I think, 4 points through Finland's first two games. Niemelä had an assist yesterday. He's logging the most minutes of any defenseman on their core. He's a guy that you can project to run the power play for the Toronto Maple Leafs probably 3 years down the road. But both guys are really similar. They're smaller skilled guys. They're really good skaters. They're good citizens. They're leaders in their age group. And you like to see that. So it's not just about, you know, what you're bringing as a player, but sometimes it's what you bring as a person that helps you to project what that player is going to be like for you. And when you have good people, good citizens, guys who work hard, guys who already have a good skill set, I think it bodes well for the future. And I think both guys are very similar, although they do play different positions. But, you know, Toronto's done a lot of due diligence in Russia, in the U.S., in Finland with a lot of their recent draft picks. And, you know, it's nice to see a couple examples of those guys playing in a situation where you don't have to check out, you know, Liga tape, you know, off
on
the internet.
A camcorder, so someone in the stands. I've had to do that before. It's tough.
You got it.
Finland good enough to maybe make a gold medal run here, or is it a Canada-USA heavy tournament in your perspective?
Well, I think the Swedes are really good too, but I think the Czechs and the Slovaks are a group below. You don't have the Russian team in there to mix things up amongst that top four. So I do think there is a clear definition between the top four teams, Sweden, Canada, U.S., and Finland, and then everybody else thereafter. And typically with Russia involved, it's more of a five-team race. Sometimes you have the Slovaks and the Czechs that can bring up the rear to make it a six-team race. But I think this is pretty clearly a four-horse race, and I wouldn't exclude the Finns at this point.
Awesome. Well, Sam, appreciate you coming on the Ailish, all the time show
nice.
Here. Gladly have you back down the road at this tournament and see how things are shaking out. Appreciate you coming.
Yeah, sounds good. Congratulations on all your recent success and continued success moving forward.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Sam.
Take care.
Sam Cosentino, Sportsnet NHL draft analyst. I really appreciate the breakdown. Leafs fans obviously eager to see Matthew Nyes once he goes and has a nice time in college. Okay, let him have that. Let him have a non-COVID pandemic season. He's going to grow. He's going to be a leader. He's going to have the opportunity to be a key contributor on a team that has a chance at a Frozen Four. Looking forward to seeing the rest of that season. I love college hockey. I'm always in tune with it. Go Big Green. Not sure how they're looking this season. We'll see. Still proud alumni. That's down the road to come. But a couple Leafs still at the World Juniors to keep an eye on. Sam broke it down. Going to be an interesting year ahead for Connor Bedard. I'm hoping it's not a Shane Wright situation. I love when a guy is able to reach his dreams, achieve them, but maybe Sam Wright has that chip on his shoulder that, or sorry, Shane Wright has that chip on his shoulder that might actually be a better story. Okay, so tonight, no World Juniors, Canadians in action. They're back tomorrow versus the Czech. I think we call them Czechia now, right? Yes, we do. Czechia. So Canada, Czechia tomorrow. There is some NFL preseason again tonight. Falcons and Lions. I'm big on the Lions this year because every time something comes out on social media, it's Dan Campbell or his team being absolutely electric. The Hard Knocks documentary series is coming out. I don't think that they're going to be a playoff contending team, but nonetheless, they have a spot in my heart. I know some of you in the text line yesterday, once I played some of those clips, said, sneaky favorite team. You can join the bandwagon with me as Lions fans this season. We got Packers.
I get emotional about this. I'm about to cry.
There they are, right? I love it. Packers, Niners as well tonight. Browns, Jaguars tonight. Blake Murphy, a big Jaguars fan, so I'm sure he'll be tuning into that. Jets and Eagles. Wow. Cardinals, Bengals. That's all tonight. We have as well National Bank Open. That's continuing. Felix is in action today. Massive quarterfinal matchup against Rude. That's at 2 p.m. start time in Montreal. Blue Jays, they're back. Blue Jays back in action against the Guardians tonight, 7:07 first pitch. I will be there. It is sitcom night. I asked you for your favorite sitcoms. Kristen Etobicoke said, I love The Office, but barely ahead for me is Parks and Rec. I could not agree more. Similar writers, I think most of them are kind of carryover. It's just a more refreshed take on The Office, I think, a little bit more modern. I do enjoy binge watching both of those. Matt in Burlington says, in the 90s, it seemed like everybody was either a Friends person or a Seinfeld person. My vote goes to Seinfeld. Who has that much time to just chill at a coffee shop? Going to the Jays game tonight, hoping to see a good show for Burrios. Oh, Matt, I'll see you there. That'll be great. I agree. The Friends lifestyle, they're loaded. They live in these New York City apartments that are outrageous and they don't really work. So that's the dream. Barker, who's on next, says Big Bang Theory. That's a good one. Isn't there a spinoff of Young Sheldon? I think my dad likes Big Bang Theory. I've never really watched it, but Barker likes it. I'll have to tune in. Okay. And I also asked about the hologram situation. The Tupac hologram was terrifying enough. This is the text line. I suffer from PTSD because of it. I'm not a fan of holograms. I'm good if we never see that again. Okay. Quickly before we say goodbye, a shout out to Ben Lewis who joined us, Sam Cosentino. Oh, Jeff Blair goes Sanford and Sons. Jeff, I don't actually know that one. Please don't come in here after the show and get mad at me. I don't know Sanford and Sons. The problem is every time I'm on the show with JD, it gives me like 15 shows to watch. I just started The Wire. I know that's not a sitcom, but let me get through The Wire and then I'll have more time. It's a lengthy series. Okay, so as I was saying, good. Thanks so much to Ben Lewis, Sam Cosentino for joining us today on the Ailish Hour. Austin and Brett behind the glass. You got Blair and Barker next. Blue Jays tonight. Have a great weekend, everybody. Looking forward to chatting on Monday. Thanks. It's the Ailish Hour.
Because I care about y'all.